Our next guest says healthcare is on track to destroy our economy within 15 years, and it's time for what he calls a revolt. Dr. Michael Fine is a physician in Rhode Island and former director of that state's public health department. He's also author of the book Healthcare Revolt: How to Organize, Build a Healthcare System, and Resuscitate Democracy All at the Same Time. Dr. Fine, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you very much for having me.
That's a very ambitious title, but healthcare destroying not only our economy, you say in this book, but our nation. Can you explain?
Well, just from an economic perspective, in 2003, we spent about 17% of family income on healthcare. Now we spend about 30%. The projection is that by 2025, we're going to spend 50%. And somewhere between 2031 and 2038, we spend 100%. And I have no idea how that works economically. Right. But it's not only the economics that's concerning. It's the impact on our politics. There's about a trillion.
And you don't mean Obamacare, I take it.
I don't mean Obamacare. Okay. On our fundamental politics, there's about $1 trillion of unnecessary or wasted spending every single year out of our $3.2 or $3.3 trillion of spending. Of that unnecessary wasteful spending, essentially that's profit that's coming out for someone and going from the public pocketbook into someone's pocket.
So when you say wasteful spending, what do you mean by that? Do you mean that we're spending money on healthcare that's not going into healthcare? It's actually going into administrator salaries and other things? Or is that what you're talking about? Or redundancy?
It gets to administrative salaries, and it gets to profit, and it goes through different ways of keeping people busy, different jobs and different corporations, different organizations. And it comes in many different forms. One is the form of overuse, of providing services that just aren't necessary. One is the form of administrative cost itself, creating billing processes that don't produce any new information or any new effectiveness. There are a zillion of these little strains of income, but they end up really making it so that the United States has health care that costs twice as much as the average of the other industrialized countries in the world.
So essentially, are you saying, when you said strains of income, my ears sort of perked up. I'm wondering, are you saying that all of these people saw a way to sort of cash in on health care and kind of dug in to get their piece of the pie? And so that's what we're dealing with right now, is this overbloated financial system that's supporting a lot of people but isn't really delivering what it's supposed to be.
That's exactly right. You know, you can think it ranges from hospital executive salaries that are millions of dollars a year in organizations that are often supposed to be nonprofits, to folks who apply for and get one of those nifty little wheelchairs, electronic wheelchairs, many of which are very important and valuable to their lives. But the process that convinces them to get it is a for-profit process. And everybody along the line has a piece of profit in supplying those goods and services to people who may or may not need them. Many times people need them, but often some of these services are not, in fact, needed at the end of the day.
And I know your book mentions solutions, but untangling this, I think, is going to be a big mess. First, let's talk about who we can blame. Is it doctors? Is it insurers? Is it big pharma? I mean, those are your usual suspects here. All of the above?
Well, I think it's been called a medical industrialized complex, and that's really what it is. Everybody has a piece of this. Everybody's got golden handcuffs and has trouble changing it. We're all used to a certain level of income and have certain income expectations and a certain level of profit and a certain level of profit expectations, and those inflate over time. If I was going to blame, you know, I'm not big on blaming, but if I was going to blame one sector, the sector is essentially government, because we've allowed this to happen. This is often a public process. Most people don't realize that 65% of what we spend on healthcare is public money from Medicare and Medicaid and Veterans Administration and so forth. Yet it has no functional oversight. The process itself kind of becomes ongoing because we've relied on the market to distribute services instead of going through the process of organizing and distributing services directly.
So what do we do? I know you have experience working in Scituate as a physician, and you created the Central Falls Neighborhood Health Station, right? That's described as this attempt to build population-based primary care and a public health collaboration. Is that what you're talking about, that we might need to prevent this revolt?
Well, I think that's one of the near things that we're going to need to do in order to build a healthcare system instead of a market. You know, the neighborhood health station we're opening in Central Falls is one single clinical enterprise that has primary care and behavioral health and urgent care and emergency medical services and lab and x-ray and substance use treatment all in one place, one team of people responsible for the care of the entire population of the city of Central Falls, or about 20,000 people. Mm. That's what it looks like, you know, sort of city by city and place by place. But I think what we really need to do is start the revolt. The only way to get this done, given the weight of money that's transferred to the other side, the weight of resistance to any small change, the only way to get this done is to build a movement that is going to have to look something like the civil rights movement or the abolitionist movement or the movement for marriage equality. You know, we have in this nation been able to fundamentally change our society a number of times, but we have to work on it. And it doesn't happen overnight. And it doesn't happen just by writing a law. It happens by, you know, a general mobilization of thousands or hundreds of thousands of people all working together. Mm-hmm. The resistance is so huge.
Well, I'm kind of cynical.
Well, I think all of us have gotten cynical, and all of us have gotten to accept it. Of the $1 trillion, the people who have something to sell spend 0.05% of that money on lobbying. That's $500 million a year on lobbying. Hmm. That kind of spending has totally distorted the political process and has made things so that our legislators often pay much more attention to people with something to sell than they do to the people they represent. Mm-hmm. And the only way to get that back is to build a mobilization.
You say doctors should do this, and they should unionize, and they should strike.
Well, doctors, nurses,
healthcare
physical
workers.
Therapists, mm-hmm. healthcare workers in general. Mm-hmm. We have, as a model, living in Chestnut Hill, Dr. Bernard Lown, who won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1985. He's a model and a teacher and a mentor and actually wrote the introduction to the book. But Dr. Lown is a world-famous cardiologist, who in the late 60s and 70s began to realize that all the cardiology that he could ever do would be useless if there was a nuclear war. So he began to work with colleagues around the nation and around the world. He met a colleague who was similarly renowned in the then Soviet Union, Dr. Yevgeny Chasnov, and together they organized something called the International Physicians to Prevent Nuclear War. That group of people did lots of organizing both inside the healthcare community and outside of it, and actually forced nuclear disarmament, and that's what got them the Nobel Peace Prize. That's the example that I think all of us need to follow.
What do you say to the folks who say, you know, yep, it's expensive, and that's why it's the best in the world? Costs money.
It's not the best in the world. When we look at it, we rank somewhere between 41st and 57th in the world for public health outcomes, depending on which outcome we're looking at and which year it is. We are not even close to the best outcomes in the world. So our infant mortality rate is 3 times the best achievable rates in the world for the average American and 9 times the best achievable outcomes for African Americans. That is not the best in the world.
Some would say, though, that there are people from other countries who would flock here to take the health care that we have. I'm channeling my father-in-law here. You know, I know exactly what he would say. So he would say, well, you know, our hospitals are top-notch. And if you look at the Mass Generals of the world, where some people have floors dedicated to them to, you know, to be able to get health care here, what do you say?
A few people come here for very sophisticated health care. But most people in most parts of the world understand that their basic health care is way better than ours is. In most countries that do this with any level of sophistication or success. Everybody has access to primary care. Similar to the model we're building in Central Falls, that primary care is available to them, and that's where they start. And they make sure that every single person in the society has that kind of access. Huh. Here in the United States, only about 50% of us haven't used primary care in a regular way.
All right. Well, some provocative ideas. I wish we had more time to flush them out, but I'm sure we'll have you back. Dr. Michael Fine, practicing physician in Rhode Island and author of the book Healthcare Revolt, How to Organize, Build a Healthcare System, and Resuscitate Democracy All at the Same Time. Dr. Fine, thanks for coming in.
Thanks very much for having me.
Coming up, a year after Hurricane Maria hit Puerto Rico, we check in with WBUR's Simone Rios, who visited the island right after the storm and 1 year later. I'm Deborah Becker, and this is Radio Boston.